Today we're going to talk about dairy industry, what happens to milk. To my count, there's about, I came up with about almost 30 things that can happen to milk, that it could turn into, etc. So we'll see what we can make sense of them. That's the first one. we'll talk about some of the halachic things as we pass them just briefly, but really it's more just to talk about what these things are, just what we're talking about. Okay, so the simplest thing is, like you just said, milk itself. Okay, you could get milk by itself. We call it, industrial people call it fluid milk. Okay, it comes as a liquid. It has something called a side issue, which is they add vitamin A and D to it, which is a Pesach concern. We tell people to buy milk before Pesach because of that, or with a kashrut Pesach with hashgacha. And the milk is always pasteurized. That's to keep it from spoiling. So that affects kalim of other things that are made in it. It's not the milk itself. It's everything else that's made on it. Like the chavis milk that's sitting here was made yesterday. It was made not chavis milk before it, or if they make other beverages on the same kalim.
Okay. What about vitamins year-round? Does it need a
hundred? Yeah, but it's a very minimal concern. Not a serious concern. So if the person were stark, they could buy it without
so it's going to be caught. The agency should insist on vitamins.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, of course.
But the consumer doesn't have to worry.
Because it's bottled. But if they put it on Pesach, or Chametz B'Masher, so then that's a concern. Okay. You could also, we talked about this a different time, you can evaporate milk, which is take out a lot of the water, boil a lot of the water out of it. Okay, in which case they sell that in cans as condensed milk. Okay, that's still milk, just with a lot of the water taken out of it. And if you can evaporate it, you then spray dry it, then that's milk powder or non-fat dry milk. Okay, that's first you condense it, and then you spray dry it, and then you have that's the milk itself.
So working in the trucking industry, I see lots of condensed skim, but I've never seen condensed milk.
Okay, the same thing.
I've seen condensed milk.
It seems to be so not a problem. What could be the shot?
Who knows? That's a business decision for somebody. I mean, whatever it is, yeah.
It's on the product. It's on the cream.
Yeah. Right. So okay, whatever it is. Okay. So those are the milk itself. Okay. But after we pass the milk itself and those three little ways to use the milk itself, I'm going to now break down the rest of things into the way I break it down. That there are four components of the milk. Okay. And that is about 5% lactose. Okay. About 3.5% fat, about 3.5% protein. You can look at the exact numbers over there, and about 1.5% other like minor vitamins and minerals and vachahena, and the bulk of it, 87% of it is water. Okay, so we're going to talk about that in those groups. We're going to break do piece by piece. I'm going to try to piece by piece through those different parts. That's just how for me to divide it. Okay. So the
you get 3/4, 3.4% away. What's John? Natural milk is 3.4.
That comes from a number of places, but the actual stats I came in from a website called MilkFats.info. Okay, with the nutritional information for milk. So I know we're used to 4%. We're used to
4%. Or Lolly even said it's higher than 4%.
Okay, so I believe you, and maybe it is. That is not going to be important to what we're talking about today. It's really not so
what?
Probably
not so relevant. Okay, it's just so you could make your bars a little more. It happens to be that this bar happens to be a 4% bar. If you counted up all the sides of the actually 4% bar, there were 100 boxes in that table before. So it's not to scale. I mean, it's to scale for what you guys want. Yeah. No, because it really says 3.4%. But anyway, okay. So when you have when you have the milk, you let the milk sit still in a container, cream rises to the top. Okay, naturally, it just rises to the top. They tell me that you used to be able to, when you bought a bottle of milk, the milk would rise to the top. You see on the top of the milk, there'd be some cream on top of it. Okay, when we buy milk, we don't have that because our milk is homogenized. Homogenizing means you basically beat the milk into such fine particles that the fat stays in suspension. Okay, if you leave it for long enough, it eventually would collect and go back to the top, but it goes for long enough by the time that would happen, the milk would have been spoiled already. Okay, so our milk is homogenized. We don't have the cream mixed in. If you buy like fluid milk, but in a dairy, that's not what happens. In a dairy, as soon as the milk comes in, the first thing that happens is it goes to a separator, which pulls this cream out. Okay, and then if they want to sell you milk, whole milk, that has, let's say, 4% fat, or 2% milk, like that's over here, the 2% milk, they add the cream back in.
Okay? Cream is what percentage fat?
The cream is fat. That's what it is. The cream is the fat. It's called cream, or called sweet cream, or whipping cream. There's a bunch of different names like that. But that's, so the first thing that happens to the milk is they take the cream off. Then, their needs, they put cream back in.
And they skim it off, they let it sit.
It just falls to the top. No, a separator is a centrifuge. Basically, it's a kind of centrifuge. So, of course, the cream comes out the top. And the milk goes up the bottom. Okay.
So maybe that's how you get 4%.
Right, but they put 4% because that's what's natural. That's what people think when we put them to have 4% is whole milk, because that's what it's supposed to be.
It's called whole milk.
Whole milk, that's what it's supposed to be. Okay. They put a little less. They maybe put like 3.4% back, you know?
I think 3.4% is probably less than what it is.
Okay. So one thing we get out of the fat is just this thing called sweet cream. Okay? If you take sweet cream and you beat it...
You make sweet cream on the same thing?
Yes. Well, no. Well, cream and sweet cream means the same thing. We'll soon see in a minute different kinds of cream. But the specific...
I'm saying in your reference right now, when you say sweet cream, you're talking about the same cream that fell to the...
Yes. Okay. Yes. Great. Okay. Now, if you beat it, you mix it very strongly, you churn it, that cream turns into butter. You whip it, you whip the cream, and it solidifies, and it creates this dry material that you could squish together to make butter.
How does homogenizing do that?
Again?
Homogenizing is also beating it. Is that a different action that doesn't cause it to work?
I don't know.
Homogenizing
through a hole.
Through a small hole.
Breaks it apart.
It's
with the rest of the milk also. Just the cream by itself.
Yeah, fine, but it should be part of it.
Okay, so now when you do that together, you end up with butter. Okay, that's butter, and the leftover. Again, so you beat it so that it clumped together into solids, which eventually you squish together, becomes the butter. The leftover from that is called buttermilk. Okay, that's, so to speak, real buttermilk. Okay, that's what people used to call buttermilk. Nowadays, what they call buttermilk. When you buy in the store buttermilk, it's not the same thing. There's two kinds of buttermilks in the world. There's the real buttermilk, so to speak, which just comes from butter, the leftover when you make the butter. And the buttermilk that you buy in the store is just skim milk that's cultured and has a certain taste to it. Okay. Okay, that's not real buttermilk. Now, when you make the highest...
No. Buttermilk is...
When you take cream...
Basically, the milk of the cream.
When you take rat buttermilk, when you take the cream and you turn it into butter, there's leftover.
What's between buttermilk and milk? Because ultimately it's the same thing without the cream, without the fat.
No, because the fat was only 3.4% of the cream. You took that cream out. Now that cream,
so you solidified something into butter. Whatever's left is the same thing as the original cream.
No, it should be like skim milk.
Yeah.
Skim milk should be the same as buttermilk.
Yeah.
No,
it's just not.
Skim milk has protein and vitamins and minerals, has all the other things in it also, all the other parts of it. This only got one piece of it, just the fat out.
Yeah, but apparently you didn't get a pure separation because this didn't turn into butter.
And it looks like a watery, it's not white anymore.
I'm just saying maybe the separation wasn't that precise.
Yellowish,
that's
watery.
Why it didn't solidify the butter.
Okay, guys, not giving me easy time. Okay, so the best, what's considered the highest quality butter is made from the way I just described to you. They make it out of sweet cream, okay? But you could also make butter out of a different kind of cream, which I'm going to tell you in a minute what that is, whey cream. A cream that's found later in the process, but we're going to talk about that in a minute, what whey cream is. But, as strange as that sounds, so this is the better quality. This comes right off the milk, but this doesn't taste as good, okay? Which is to say is that the taste that people like of butter is a taste of the not-such-good quality a cream, and the mela, in order to make high quality butter taste better, they add something called lipase. Lipase traditionally comes from the throats of, I forgot what kind of animal, it's an enzyme that comes in there, and it helps digest the butter. So what people prefer the taste of the pre-digested butter, so the higher quality butter, being made from sweet cream, is the butter that's more likely to have lipase added to it to make it taste better. Whereas the butter made from whey cream, which is more kosher sensitive, the whey cream itself is more kosher sensitive, we'll see why, that would not typically have lipase.
And lipase is a kosher decision?
It comes from the throat of an animal? Yeah, that's
pretty serious. So, just for starters, this said the butter is mutter without people suing for that action, it's reshareability.
If, well, butter has other things can be added to it also.
Yeah, besides the new additive.
Right, so if it has, if it's lipase added to it, then that would
how
be
how long did this happen, this lipase issue?
What do you mean? That's, it happens all the time. It's not, it didn't happen yesterday.
Years, I mean, people obviously used to enjoy butter.
No, so if you were 1,000 years ago making it in your backyard, you wouldn't do it.
I assume it would say it on the greens.
Yes, it probably has to say it. I don't know if they could add it in without doing that. If it was just cream and salt, that's usually what you can see on the butter. Then that's what it is. It's coming from sweet cream.
This would be like a flavoring type of thing?
It's not a flavoring. It doesn't, you don't taste the lipase. Anything? The lipase digests the butter, digests the fat, begins to digest the fat, and it gives it a certain taste to it.
So that's the ingredients. It's like a processing.
I don't know what. I think Jess is right. That's going to be listed. Okay, now, some other things that you can make, some other byproducts of it. Now, I'm sorry that my graphics are not going to work here so well, okay? But you're going to have to live with it. These are other things that are made with butter, that are byproducts of butter oil, and lipolyzed butter oil. That's, again, lipase with butter oil. I got a little box here that you can't see. And hydrogenated fat, butyric acid, those are things that come, those are things that are byproducts of making butter. Butyric acid, and it says there, that's a natural butyric acid, not so common. Most butyric acid is not natural, it's artificial, and it's not kosher tissue. This way, if it was natural butyric acid, then it would be coming from butter, that would be different. Okay.
That would be dairy.
Yeah, but it would, yeah, okay, we'll go, same thing with it, yes, okay. Now, one last thing has to do with the fat section, which is not really made from the cream, which is, and that is ice cream, okay? Now, ice cream is not really made from cream, per se, but ice cream is milk with a lot of cream in it, okay, like 10 to 16% cream, has a lot of cream in it, and then you stir it together with sugar, and as it freezes, the stirring makes it fluffier, and all those other ingredients make it taste like what it's supposed to taste like. So it ends up with what we call ice cream. Okay, you get air into it, and it makes it taste like ice cream. So it's made with cream, but it's not like the other thing, not like butter, which is made from cream, it's just made with a lot of cream in it. Okay.
Should they take milk and put sweet cream back in?
They what?
Take milk and they
add it. They have to add cream to it, but then they add lots of other chaser, right? Also. And there's other things that get mixed in also, like sugar and flavors, vachena. And then, the chachma here is the stirring it as it becomes frozen to help get air it to make it a fluffy taste. Okay. Next. Okay, now we're going to talk about protein, okay, which is the most serious of the things we're going to talk about. Okay. We said that there's 3% or so protein. There are two proteins in milk, okay? About 80% of the protein is called casein, and about 20% is called whey. Okay, there's two proteins that are in milk. The chachma here is to get the protein out of the milk. Okay, the protein is very valuable. Okay, that's the best things we're going to make are going to come from the protein. Good things are going to come from the protein. And there are two ways to get the protein to come out of the milk, to precipitate them. That's a word we've been using. We're busy with something now. And there's two ways to do it. And one is with rennet, and one is with acid. Okay? What does that mean? Rennet is a protease enzyme. Protease means an enzyme that works on protein. Okay, ACE means it's an enzyme that works on this thing. Anyway, it's protease, and what protease does is that it affects part of the casein, called the cap casein. I don't know what that means. But part of the casein, the cap casein, and it makes the casein not stable in the mixture, and it separates from the mixture. It falls out of the mixure. It separates. Instead of being mixed into the milk, like in here, the proteins mix in, but in the, once you put the rennet in, it changes the casein to the point that the casein doesn't stay diluted anymore. Okay? And it separates. Okay? It separates in the milk. It starts floating around in the milk, floating to the top of the milk. Okay? Like clumps. Okay? And the other way is with acid, and that's because casein is only stable in milk, is only soluble in milk when it's a salt, whatever the complication is, don't worry about the details of it, but when the pH gets too low, it separates, it goes out of the, it will not stay diluted anymore. Like in the case that we were just dealing with, when you change the pH, it doesn't fit in solution anymore. It doesn't stay diluted anymore.
So that doesn't mean milk.
No, it's a different thing. It was a different food. In this case, we were dealing with a different food, but in this case, the casein will not stay in if it gets too acidic. Okay? So, So you could, after you get it out, you could rejoin it. Hey, okay, fine. Now, the simplest way to make it more acidic is to add acid to it. Okay, and that's what we're using an example. We do it in water. Okay, and this is vinegar. That's acidic. It's acidic, and there's a cup of milk. Okay, sorry for this. Sorry for the people in the camera. Don't have to live with it. You could try this at home. Okay, you can use it. Okay, and here's a cup of milk, and if we add. Hopefully it'll work. I didn't try for it. And I don't know if you can see already that it's separating. I don't know if you see that.
No. Maybe we have to mix it.
Yeah, I didn't.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I see it.
Okay, so when I've done this before and I couldn't find upstairs, I was looking for what's called coffee filters. When I've done this beforehand, I did it with a coffee filter. I've done it with a coffee filter, so then you could see the pieces come out. You pour it through the filter, you see the pieces separating from each other. Okay, so one way is you add something acidic, like we just did. Like you added, I don't know what's on the bottom of my vinegar here, but you add vinegar or lemon juice or something like that.
So, one second, this is separating the fat?
Or no, the casein, the protein, separating the casein from the rest of the parts of the milk.
Okay, the stuff that we see floating on the tap is just the
casein. That's casein? No, it's casein with fat. Actually, you see casein. Well, what happens is casein encapsulates the fat, pieces of fat, and as it separates, it encapsulates pieces of fat. So you're seeing there is casein together with fat together, mm-hmm. mixed, separating out of there. Okay, so the
it's not going to taste right there because you put a lot of vinegar.
I know, this was just a demonstration. This was not meant for you to eat it. Okay, now the other way is you don't have to add acid to make it acidic. If you let the milk sit by itself, if you let the milk sit on the counter, it will, we'll say anything, it'll sour, okay? It'll start to become acidic. There's a lactic acid that will start building up. That's a bacteria that will start living off the milk. It will become more acidic, and then it will separate, okay? So if you leave, you ever left a bottle of milk out on the counter for too long, and you start seeing that it starts clumping up, that's what's going on. The milk is becoming, the lactic acid is forming, bacteria forming lactic acid in the milk. That's making it more acidic, causing the casein to separate out of it. Okay.
How does lactic acid get in?
It's bacteria. It's a byproduct of bacterial functioning. Bacteria floating around that start eating probably the sugar.
It's covered.
Yeah, but there's things in there. Yeah, it's only that good. You know, it's not hermetically sealed. And then it starts. Because the pH is lower, it starts to separate.
Well, how come in the fridge it doesn't separate?
Because in the bacteria don't like the cold. So in the fridge, it lasts for a certain amount. If you leave it for a month in the fridge, it will. That's why eventually it expires. If you have shelf stable, that means it's so well done that there's no bacteria. Nothing's going to grow in that thing. But in the not shelf stable, so the pasteurization lasts it for a couple of weeks. But eventually they're going to win. Eventually they're going to come back. Okay? So you can also help those bacteria along. Okay? You can help them along. You put in the cultures, helps the bacteria along to get them going, to get them moving, to make it happen. You don't want, in the fact, you don't want to wait 6 weeks for it to happen. You know? So you help it along by adding a culture to it. Okay, the other reasons to eat cultures, okay, so these are our two ways to get the casein out. The one is with rennet, that works a certain way, and one is acid. Okay, two different ways to get it out. They don't make cheese, they don't make exact same casein. The caseins are a little bit different from each other. Like this. So both of these methods, using rennet or using acid, can both be used with or without fat, and as follows. If you use acid to separate it, to separate the casein out of the milk, you're going to get a soft cheese, okay? Like farmer cheese, okay? Or
This is something that after you already took out the fat, you just have a skim milk?
No. If you, with fat.
You know, you did not separate the fat yet.
I didn't say you didn't. You separate the fat, you put fat back in to make your cheese.
But why are you putting that back in? Why are you just not separating?
Well, separate it. It's just the standard thing. They separate for us. But either way.
I'm saying when they make the soft cheese, they separated it. They made it milk like we see now. And then they
added acid to it.
Homogenizing it. And then they add the acid to it or whatever it is to...
Mm-hmm. Well, they allow it to sour. Whatever they add a culture to make it sour, to lower the pH, that it sours and it makes a soft cheese.
And if let's say they did not add the fat back in,
I'm going to tell you in 1 second. Tell me that in a second if there's no fat in it, okay? And if you eat it with rennet, we call that hard cheese, like mozzarella cheese, okay? Or some other kind of cheese you're used to, feta cheese, okay? Or other kind of cheeses that they're made by rennet separating, rennet causing the casein to come out, okay? And if it has fat inside of it, if the casein separates with fat, we call that cheese. If it separates without fat, Okay, if you do it with skim milk, okay, with no fat in it, then we just call it casein. Then we call it either acid casein or rennet casein. Okay, but the casein part is the same. Whether you made cheese or you made just casein, it's the same thing. Both of them are cheese. Both of them are casein that was separated out. Either was separated by the acid or by the rennet. One has fat and one doesn't have fat. So either if it has fat, we call it cheese, okay, soft cheese or hard cheese. Or if it has no fat, then we call it just casein, acid casein or rennet casein. Okay. So before I go on, being as there's only two ways to get the casein out, either with acid or with rennet. There's two ways to get it out. The difference between the cheese, between one cheese and the next, the difference between mozzarella cheese and cheddar cheese, has to do with other side things that go on. What temperature do you do it at? What cultures do you put in? What do you age it? All kinds of side factors have to do with it. But the ikar of what happens is the exact same thing for all the cheeses. All the hard cheeses are the same.
A hard cheese.
It's a hard cheese, yes. From this person, we call this a hard cheese. It's a rennet set cheese.
Soft cheese is about like farmer cheese.
Like farmer cheese, yeah, like farmer cheese. I'm going to get to cream cheese in 1 second. Cream cheese is a little bit of a different thing. No, cream cheese, yes. Cream cheese, yes. Cream cheese is a
cottage,
soft cheese.
Cream cheese.
No, cottage cheese is the one I'm going to get to in a second. Cottage cheese is a little bit different, but cream cheese is, yes.
Cottage cheese
right there? I'm getting to that in 1 second. Okay, now, and what's important to us is that Chazal said that when you make cheese, a yid has to be part of the making of the cheese. We have to have Gvinis Yisrael. Either that means he has to watch it, or he has to be part of it, or he has to own it, not for today, but it has to be Gvinis Yisrael. Something, a yid has to be something to do with that. And we assume that that only is true for rennet set cheeses. Okay? We assume that that's not true for acid set cheeses. Okay? So hard cheese and rennet casein need Gvinis Yisrael. Soft cheese and acid casein do not need Gvinis Yisrael. Okay, why that's true is its own question, but that's the assumption. The stuff made with rennet, that's like, so to speak, traditional cheese. So the cheese or the rennet made from it are need Gvinis Yisrael. The other ones do not need Gvinis Yisrael.
Another one agrees to
it. That's correct. That's correct. I checked it. There's
go listen
to the old shit. Not all rabbinic sources agree to it. Yes.
And what's made with rennet casein or rennet or acid casein? What do they do with it?
It's an ingredient.
It's just an ingredient in other products.
Yeah,
it's a protein, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And based on this, that would mean that cheese always has a higher protein content than milk. Is that right?
Cheese? Of course. That's what it is. Cheese is protein and fat. That's what it is.
Much more concentrated.
And milk is only 3 or 4% protein, whatever it is. A couple of percent protein. Yeah, of course. That's what cheese is. Cheese is protein, but it's fat in it. Okay. So you can see, like, cheese is part skim. But it can't be all skim. If you make cheese that's all skim, then you get and casein, you know what I mean? That's not what you want. Okay. So the after you did this, we had this separation. We had this separation where we separated out the casein with fat, and we separated it out of the milk. Okay. What's left behind? What this then is filtered and squished together to make our cheese. And what's left behind? What's left behind is a grayish liquid. I don't know if I can look on the screen. A grayish liquid, which we call whey, okay? That grayish liquid has got a number of things in it, but the most important one is the whey protein that's still in there, so we call it whey. I don't know why I wrote that, but okay, anyhow, whey is not cheese. So the whey, even the casein part is the cheese, the whey part is not the cheese, so it doesn't need to be Gvinis Yisrael. I mean, if you made treif cheese, you made treif cheddar cheese, the cheese, if you made cheese without a yid there, okay, if they made cheddar cheese without any Jewish part of it, the cheddar cheese is treif. The whey that's left behind is not treif. That's not Gvinis Akum. Okay, the cheese part is the Gvinis Akum. The part that got lifted, that separated out, that's Gvinis Akum. The left behind, the whey, is not Gvinis Akum. But whey has three of its own reasons why it might not be kosher. If I'm telling you, it should always be kosher. Because the cheese part is the Gvinis Akum, but the whey part is not Gvinis Akum. There's no Gvinis Akum for the whey part. So there's three reasons why the whey could be, this grayish liquid could be not kosher. And the three reasons are, it could be that the cheese was made at above Yad Seled. But some cheeses, for whatever reason, Italian cheese like the Parmesan and Provolone, are made at above Yad Seled. In which case, there's a transfer of time from the curd to the whey. If the cheese is being set at above Yad Seled, then the whey has a bleah. The other way is that after you make the cheese, some cheeses are cooked,
Then when it's separated, it's at the outside.
While it was being separated, while it was setting, while it was becoming a cheese.
Separating, that's when you're separating the milk from the casein from the whey.
While it's setting, the cheese is setting.
While it's separating the casein from the whey.
Mm-hmm. Right, it was at above the outside. But the second is, some cheeses, after they pull them out, they cook the cheese. Mozzarella cheese is like that, right? So it's like stringy and stretchy. If they have the cheese now, the blocks of cheese, and they dunk it into hot water to cook it, that hot water gets mixed into the whey. And the third is, there are people still who make cheese with animal rennet. Okay, the rennet they actually get from an animal, in which case, forget about it being Venus Aquum, it had a myrmid of, that was trade, and we assume the myrmid affects the weight also. We spoke about that a different time. Let's consider there have been a myrmid on both halves, not just on the cheese half, there's a myrmid on the weight half also. Okay, so those are three reasons why.
Those three reasons are common in Wisconsin?
No. No, they're not. The first one, which is to set cheese above Yatzalah, but only certain cheeses are like that. So if Jesse wants to approve a whey plant,
right,
he finds out what kind of cheese are you making in this plant. If he finds that they're making only cheddar cheese,
yeah,
then the whey...
So we don't know, and we want to know the status. I'm not saying this can be one, but what would be the assumed...
Usually it's not above Yatzalah, but usually none of these issues could... But we don't just take it. So Jesse will find out what's going on in the plant. He'll know what kind of cheese they're making in the plant. They say if they're only making cheddar cheese in this plant, mm-hmm, then the whey is going to be kosher, because there's no way that there isn't any possibility for that to become not kosher. Mm-hmm. Okay, no way. Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay, so then, okay, now from this whey, the whey that's this, what we call this liquid that we call whey, gets, we talked about this a few weeks ago, this whey gets its own separation. Okay, in the times of Chazal, it used to be cooked. Okay, we'll talk about that in a second. But in times of Chazal, it used to be cooked. Nowadays, we filter it. And we separate this whey into a bunch of different directions. Okay? So one is, one side, what you're about to see on... Oh, you know what? I did something silly. Okay, I'm going to see something silly over here. I'm sorry about that. Okay, one is, for the whey part, when we separate the whey part, we can make... I have four things listed here. You can make whey powder, whey protein concentrate, whey cream... I'll get to the first one in a second. In other words, when you separate this and you get the whey out of the whey, and there's the protein out of the liquid that we call whey, it makes all these different kinds of things, these different kinds of whey products. And the last one is ricotta cheese, which ricotta cheese is a cheese made out of whey. Okay, usually cheese is made out of casein. This ricotta cheese is a cheese made out of whey.
Ricotta and cottage are the same thing?
No. Ricotta is two different things. Ricotta and cottage are not the same thing. Okay, so ricotta cheese is a cheese made out of whey. So it doesn't need to be Gvina Yisrael, but it has its own. Whatever its child's are to whey, that's the child's to ricotta cheese. Okay? Those are the things that are made from whey. Okay, but if you go the other direction, the parts that are not whey, okay, so now we pull the whey out of the whey protein out of the whey liquid. I know it's getting confusing here. Once we pull the whey protein out and make those things, then on the other side, the things that are left behind are water. Okay, we spoke about water at a different time, which is where that water goes. Lactose, we're going to get to in a minute. And the other things like the minor ingredients. And I wrote here whey also, that shouldn't have been there, because the whey is really on this side. Okay, so when we separate it, the whey that's on the bottom, it should be on the left side. Okay, anyhow, so we separate it. We get, on the one hand, we get the protein things, the things made out of the whey powder, the whey cream, chahena. And then on the other side, we get the leftover of the lactose and other stuff. So this whey cream that you see over here is what some people will make butter out of it, make the lower quality butter made out of this whey cream that's over here. So then that butter has the shilas of whey. The three shilas I told you about that apply to whey apply to butter, which we made out of whey cream, because that's what it is. It's whey. Okay. Now, two, three sort of last things having to do with the protein, and that's like this. I keep telling you that you make cheese by pulling the casein out of the everything else. Okay, that's how you make cheese. That's a real, sort of like a real cheese. Cottage cheese does that. You make an acid-set cheese, like this. This is an acid-set cheese. And then you mix the curd together with the whey. In other words, in a regular cheese, you separate the curd. Curd is the casein. You separate the curd out, and then that's all you have. You eat just curd. That's what you're eating. In cottage cheese, you separate them. Like in this case, we separated them, and then we mix them back together. Okay, when we mix them back together, that together, the curd and the whey together, that's called cottage cheese. Okay, that's the traditional way to make cottage cheese. So if you want to make cottage cheese in your house, you take some milk, put in some lemon juice, and then stir it up together. Now you have yourself cottage cheese. Okay, and that's all it is. That's what cottage cheese is.
The same ratio?
Same issue of what?
As the original milk.
Yeah, in the traditional way to make cottage cheese, that's all it is. You separate the curd from the whey, and you serve like Little Miss Muffet had a curd in the whey, right? You separate the curd.
The fat and the protein.
Right, right, that's what we. Right. In the regular cheese, you separate them, you filter them away from each other, you squish them together, you make it into a solid block. In this case, you don't do that. You keep them mixed, you then stir them back together, so now you're eating the curd, that the chunky part.
Eating drinking milk, just happens to be a little separated.
Correct. That's how traditionally you make cottage cheese. Nowadays, they take the curd and they mix it with a liquid. They call it a dressing. They mix a dressing into it and make something that mimics traditional cottage cheese.
And why do they do that?
I have no idea. Okay. So that's hey. Right. Okay. Whatever. Okay. I don't know if it's money or taste, whatever it is. Okay. That's another thing that's what we call a sort of a cheese, but it's not really a cheese. Are yogurt and sour cream? Okay. Yogurt and sour cream do not have a separation to them. We don't separate our curd protein to make them. Rather, we take milk, either whole milk or skim milk, we take the milk and we ferment it, and the whole milk solidifies into something else. Okay, it solidifies into yogurt or sour cream. Okay, the milk is cultured, meaning we let it ferment into something. We don't separate things. We add something to the milk to cause it to become yogurt. Okay, to convert itself into yogurt. It ferments into yogurt. Or into sour cream.
Why isn't it automatically separate? Why isn't the enzyme in it cause it to separate?
I don't know. I guess they don't let the pH get that low. Whatever it is, it converts it. Maybe Yossi knows the answer to that. But it's not. It's different than all other cheeses, which are just protein, just the casein, separated from everything else. There's no leftovers when you make sour cream. Sour cream and yogurt are the whole milk. Whatever you put in. Sometimes it's without fat or with fat. Whatever you put in is what you get out. There's no leftovers when you mix sour cream. Okay. So now we have some other little parts to do. Now onto our... You have no more screen. I'm sorry, guys. Okay, the sugar. Okay, so we spoke about the fat first, and then we spoke about the protein. Now the sugar. When in this liquid, the whey liquid, what says in quotation marks, whey, the liquid left over from making cheese, it has in it the whey protein and all kinds of other stuff in it. And nowadays, as I said to you, what we do is the way they separate those pieces from each other is through filtration, called ultrafiltration. Okay, what goes through the filter, what is called permeate, because it permeates the filter, and what stays behind in the filter, the solid, is called retentate. Okay, and the part that stays behind is the whey. The part that goes through is the water, the vitamins and minerals, and the lactose. Okay, those are the parts that go through. Those are they permeate the filter. And the whey protein stays behind the filter. That's the retentive. Okay, so the Gemara says that midraisa, mei chalav, is not milchus. It's only milchus mitrabana. Okay, mei chalav, the water of milk. Okay, well, what's mei chalav? So it's a machlokes rishonim what mei chalav means. Some rishonim hold that mei chalav refers to this gray liquid, this whey, the whey that comes when you make cheese. The leftover water is called mechalav. That water, after you make the cheese, what's left behind, that's mechalav, and they hold that that's only milchus mitrabanan. And other rishonim say, no, it's not true. This is milchus mitaraisa. When we filter it, or in their case, they cooked it, and we separate out the whey protein and leave behind another liquid that's even more watery than the first one was, that's what mechalav is. It's the second. In later parts, they call it mechalav. Okay? It's the water of milk. And that's, so the Shulchan Aruch says, we're machmir for that, to say that only that is milchus mitarabanan, and not regular way, that is milchus mitaraisa. Well, in your, what does it make a difference to us, whether it's milchus mitaraisa mitarabanan? Because you're only allowed to have, there's only Isra Hanah from basa b'chal mitaraisa. You have basa b'chal mitarabanan, there's no Isra Hanah. So you could feed to your pets. If there's lactose in the pet food, that's okay. Lactose and meat in the pet food, that's okay. It's not basa b'chal mitaraisa, it's only basa b'chal mitarabanan. Okay, so you could feed that to a pet. I have other hana. I don't know if you think of another hana to it. If it's lactose, only asim drabana. Okay, people are more makel for a cholim. For some reason, it's a lot of medicines for a cholim to eat it after flesh, because it's only milchus drabana. Okay. Now, lactose itself gets used in different ways. I have a few things that I wrote down here. You may remember from a different time that lactose is two sugars. It's galactose and glucose. And the galactose portion of it somehow is good in making a low-calorie sweetener called tagatose. I don't know why. For whatever reason, it's some special use for that. So it would be milchus. Also, lactose is a sugar, right? Lactose is just like any other sugar that we've talked about at a different time. You could use it for fermentations. Okay, now it would seem to be a waste to use it for fermentations unless you live in a place like New Zealand or Ireland where they have so much milk that they have so much leftover lactose that they use it for fermentation. Okay, so in those kind of cases, it's like a concern. There's also people use lactose for fermentations when they want some dairy components to pass over. Okay, like we used to have a company that made, they're making, I don't know if it's even legal anymore, they made diacetyl. Diacetyl is a dairy type flavor, like a butter type flavor, and they made it with lactose. They made it with that either because they wanted it to say made for milk or they wanted it to have some carryover from taste. We have a company right now who makes, on occasion, something out of, essentially out of lactose also, a flavor type component used in the dairy industry, and they wanted to have this carryover from the milk part of it also. Okay, so it happens, you know. But it's not so common to use in fermentations, but it happens for whatever reason, okay? Okay, and last but not least is the water and the minor components, okay? So the in the water that passes through this filter is calcium. In theory, you could take calcium out of there and make, like, calcium, like you want to have in a vitamin or something like that. Theoretically, you can. You could do that. It's not likely. Almost everybody makes it out of shellfish, the shells of shellfish. Okay, and of course, shellfish are not kosher, but magically, the shellfish shells are kosher. That's its own question. But the calcium is almost never made out of milk. I mean, it could be, but that's not a typical way to make it. I didn't write that here. Okay, anyhow, the very last thing is what we've talked about before, which is, after all this is done, and we separated a million pieces out of it, we found our 29 things that we got out of the milk to make different things out of it, what's left behind is water. Okay, we spoke about a different time about the funny ways companies find things to do with their water left over. Okay, and that's just something to keep an eye on, the cow water. This water that's left after all this stuff is used in different kinds of ways, like for cleaning or for kashering, right? Kashering from milk to power with cow water or whatever. We talked about that. That's just on the gets left over. If you heard 29 things, you might forget about it.